In a world where 8-year-old girls now diet and cosmetic surgery has become medicine's fastest-growing specialty, something has gone terribly wrong with how we view women's bodies. As women gained unprecedented freedoms in the late 20th century, legal rights, reproductive choice, professional opportunities, beauty standards paradoxically became more oppressive. This isn't coincidental. The beauty myth functions as a calculated political weapon against women's advancement, replacing older control mechanisms like enforced domesticity that no longer work in our modern world. For every feminist victory, a beauty-related counterforce emerged. As workplace discrimination laws passed, appearance-based discrimination intensified. As sexual liberation progressed, beauty pornography linked commodified beauty to sexuality. As reproductive rights expanded, pressure for invasive cosmetic surgeries grew. The myth falsely presents beauty as objective and biological when it's actually a currency system designed to maintain male dominance by forcing women to compete in a vertical hierarchy based on imposed physical standards. The timing reveals everything. As women gained social power, the beauty industry exploded from $33 billion in 1980 to over $200 billion by 2000.
You look like $1 million. This compliment reveals how beauty functions as a parallel currency in our economy. When women entered the workforce en masse, their professions were often reclassified as display professions, where appearance became a job requirement. This professional beauty qualification, PBQ, gives employers a litigation-free way to discriminate. Courts have created contradictory rulings. Attractiveness in hiring is deemed a natural phenomenon outside legal protection. Yet if a woman's appearance prompts harassment, it's considered about looks rather than gender, leaving her unprotected by civil rights laws. The financial impact is severe. Professional women spend up to a third of their income on beauty maintenance as a necessary career investment. Even women who earn as much as men effectively pay themselves less through this self-imposed expense, explaining why corporate women at VP level earn 42% less than male peers. What if we recognize this beauty tax for what it is, economic discrimination we've been convinced to inflict upon ourselves?
Media consistently portrays women as either pretty but dumb or smart but plain, a false dichotomy persisting from biblical times to modern entertainment. As John Berger observed, men look at women. Women watch themselves being looked at, creating a split where women become both surveyor and surveyed. Women's magazines provide rare platforms for female-focused debate while simultaneously fueling self-hatred through beauty content, operating under invisible censorship that erases aging women through airbrushing. As traditional religious authority declined, the beauty myth emerged as a substitute religion with its own rituals, sins, and salvation narratives. Diet books adopted language of temptation and sin, echoing religious traditions, while evangelical weight loss books explicitly connect faith and appearance. This beauty religion redefines original sin as being female rather than mortal. Girls learn early to fear the invisible stains of ugliness, age, or fat, while the beauty industry employs cult-like techniques, offering protection that resonates with women's actual vulnerability. Imagine having the capacity for multiple orgasms and endless pleasure variations, yet feeling fundamentally inadequate during sex. This paradox affects many women. Alfred Kinsey found that while religious beliefs barely impacted men's sexual pleasure, they could slice as powerfully as the circumcision knife into a woman's enjoyment. The beauty myth continues this sexual control tradition. As women gained sexual freedom, 1960s-80s, beauty pornography and beauty sadomasochism emerged, reintroducing guilt and shame into female sexuality. Pornographic conventions infiltrated mainstream advertising, teaching women they needed specific faces and bodies for sexual ecstasy. This artificial linking of beauty and sexuality functions as social control, keeping women focused on appearance rather than pleasure. The power structure thrives on hostile sexual images, but feels threatened by mutual eroticism, or female desire.
equal, nonviolent heterosexual love threatens established power. If men loved real women rather than idealized images, serious money and authority might defect. Beauty pornography creates sexual shame, leaving women across the political spectrum feeling quiet dismay they cannot articulate. One student described it simply as feeling incredibly bad about myself. Have you ever wondered why the ideal female body has thinned as women gained legal rights? Until 75 years ago, Western art celebrated women's natural amplitude. With emancipation, this changed to what fashion historian Anne Hollander calls the look of sickness, poverty, and nervous exhaustion. The timing is telling. Dieting became a female preoccupation when Western women received voting rights around 1920, with a dramatic shift toward linear female forms between 1918 to 1925. Twiggy's shocking thinness emerged in 1965, coinciding with the pill and women's movement. Today's models weigh 23% less than average women, creating an impossible standard that has 90% of women believing they're overweight, with 25% dieting daily. What we call dieting is actually self-inflicted semi-starvation. India's poorest women consume 1,400 calories daily, 600 more than Western women on popular diets. Research shows healthy men on similar diets became obsessed with food, developed depression, lost social functioning, and experienced uncontrollable hunger, leading to binge eating. The thin ideal isn't aesthetically beautiful, but politically expedient, a solution to female empowerment that keeps women weak, distracted, and hungry. After millennia associating femaleness with suffering through childbirth and illegal abortions, women in the late 20th century experienced a strange new absence of female pain. With contraception, legal abortion, and economic independence, the beauty myth filled this void, making cosmetic surgery the fastest-growing medical specialty. The industry exploits women's conditioning to believe suffering is necessary for worthiness. Like Victorian medicine that pathologized normal female processes, today's beauty industry reclassifies healthy bodies as diseased. Despite unprecedented female health and longevity, the age of surgery breaks healthy bodies into defective components. We're told women freely choose beauty's pain, but as Wolf asks, are women less hungry, less bloody when acting as their own torturers? A raw dermis feels no comfort in knowing the motive behind its burning. What is a woman? Is she what is made of her? Do her experiences have value? These questions reveal the essence of the beauty myth. The issue isn't about feeling guilty for wearing lipstick, but addressing what makes women feel bad initially. The beauty myth creates a double bind. Women are deemed either too ugly or too pretty to be credible, silencing them when we're distracted by their appearance. The myth's power lies in creating an economy where one woman's body is used to hurt another, revealed in phrases like, "Don't hate me because I'm beautiful." Another world is possible. We can develop non-competitive, non-hierarchical, and non-violent interpretations of beauty where women refuse to criticize each other, give authentic praise, and reject situations that pit them against one another. We can see other women without comparison and recognize our bodies as instruments of power and pleasure, not problems to be fixed. The beauty myth has convinced us that our bodies are battlegrounds when they should be sanctuaries. Freedom begins when we recognize the prison we've built and walk away.